want to keep this in. Hi, I'm Candon.
I'm Rebecca.
And I'm Becca.
And this is Tour Guide Tell All. So this week we are going to talk all about Alice Roosevelt Longworth.
So our hope with this podcast is to share the stories of some really wild and interesting people, talk about some things we don't always get to talk about in the field or that we have to dance around. And there's no better person when it comes to scandals, outrageous activity, and very delicious, spicy quotes than Alice Roosevelt Longworth. So she's the perfect subject, I think, for our first podcast. It's very fitting because we're recording this right at the end of March. March is Women's History Month. It's been a little overshadowed by everything happening in the world in the last couple of weeks, but this is usually the month we dedicate to talking about women's history and the impact women have had, and Alice is a perfect fit for that. I also think it's fun that we're doing this for Women's History Month, because it's a nice tie-in to a company that we partner with frequently, A Tour of Her Own, which is a tour company specializing in women's history. We were going to do a tour this weekend in DuPont Circle that included Alice Roosevelt Longworth as a partnership with Toho. So since we can't do that tour, I think it's really great we're doing this podcast.
I'm so sad that we're missing that tour.
I am too.
This has been the longest march ever. But not in a good way, like not in a way that lets us support women's history stories for a longer period of time. Just yeah. In like, how is it still
March?
How is it still March? No, but I'm really excited to hear all about Alice Roosevelt Longworth from one of DC Byfoot's best tour guides to talk about kind of the darker side and scandals. And Alice is just full of incredible stories. So Rebecca, please tell me all about kind of Alice's beginnings. Tell me who she is.
Okay. Alice Lee Roosevelt was the oldest daughter of Theodore Roosevelt and Alice Hathaway Roosevelt. She was born in 1884 and her mother dies 2 days later from child-related complications. And her father is, of course, grief-stricken. And he basically...
I have to interject. Not only does Alice die, or Alice Senior, Alice mother die, but Theodore Roosevelt's own mother, so Alice's grandmother, also dies in the same day, same house. And so Alice's life starts surrounded by all this death. And Theodore Roosevelt writes in his journal to kind of commemorate this, "The light has gone out of my life." So instead of her birth being this great joy, it's wrapped up in tragedy. And I just have to jump in and say that because I think it shades why she is the way she is.
Oh, I absolutely agree. Her father can't deal with raising a child and mourning his wife and his mother. And so he basically foists Alice, who he calls Baby Lee, because he can't actually utter the name Alice. And in fact, he never, ever in his whole life calls her by her first name. He refers to her as Lee until his dying day. He basically foists his newborn daughter on his older sister. And he kind of takes off for the Dakota Territories and spends the first couple of years of her life very much an absent father. He gets remarried when she's about 3 or 4 to a woman he's known his whole life, Edith Caro, and they are going to go on to have 5 children of their own. And so while Alice is pretty close to her siblings, her and her father never really get past this. He really is never warm to her. And in fact, Theodore Roosevelt's not particularly a warm parent anyway. He's very much go, go, go. But she always suspects that he blames her for her mother's death, and they never really repair their relationship. So that sort of her early years are really shrouded in all of this tragedy. She kind of grows up not knowing, kind of understanding, because she's a little kid, what exactly is going on and why her father's like this. And her father then, you know, is pretty busy with his other children, his political career. And so she kind of feels like she gets sort of shunted off to the side. She's 16 years old when her father becomes president of the United States. And it's worth mentioning, her father becomes president, not through an election, but through the assassination of the president before him. He was William McKinley's vice president. Through a gunshot wound, William McKinley dies, and Theodore Roosevelt, the youngest president we've ever had, moves into the...
I feel like we should shout out that this will be a future episode, all of the presidential assassinations and the stories behind them. Deaths of the presidents while in office. Because I feel like this is a topic we all... talk about
going back to this. Yes. Yes.
So yes. Keep an ear out. Future episode, presidential assassinations. But back to Alice.
I should also mention, when it comes to McKinley's assassination, Alice is so typically Alice about it. She would say in interviews later, she was elated and thrilled that McKinley was assassinated. Even in 1974, when she's being interviewed by Sally Quinn for the Washington Post, she's just unequivocally just like, it was the greatest day of my life. And sorry, not sorry that I feel that way. So even as a teenager, she realizes this is a huge opportunity for her. Also maybe kind of for her dad, but mostly for her.
I feel like Alice would be someone of all the historical figures in the DC history that we cover, who should have a Twitter account?
Oh God, yes. She's routinely at the top of my list of people that I wish could comment on whatever political thing is happening at the present moment.
This is probably a good time to mention her famous pillow. She had this pillow needle stitched and kept in her foyer of her very famous Washington, D.C. house. And she always pulled it out to show people. And the pillow said, if you don't have anything nice to say, come and sit here next to me. Which, if that isn't an invitation to join Twitter, right? I don't know what is.
We should make a like Day in Alice's Life Twitter like fake account. The alt Alice. I'll work on that. That'll be our next venture. Because who knows how long I will be stuck in my house.
So here's the situation we find ourselves in 1901. Alice Roosevelt is 16. She's very pretty. She's very wealthy. And her father has just become president of the United States. And she loves the spotlight, just like her dad did. And she also has some pretty significant daddy issues, which I feel like we just talked about. So what better place for this woman than being on the national stage? Like, am I right here? And to give you a taste of her father and her relationship, not too many months after he becomes president, the family is vacationing in their summer home in New York. And the Secret Service are guarding the entrance. They have this big estate, and the Secret Service are guarding the entrance to the estate. And this guy comes up in a carriage and announces to the Secret Service that he is here to marry Alice Roosevelt. And the Secret Service are like, yeah, okay, buddy. No, I don't think so. There's a physical altercation. And it turns out that this man has a pistol on him. And so now the Secret Service aren't not playing around. They tell this guy to leave. And in the struggle, the president sees what's going on. And Theodore Roosevelt was never one to shy away from getting involved in things. And so he kind of heads down there, gets hip deep in the situation, and immediately assesses things and says, no, this is not an assassin. This man is a lunatic. He's obviously crazy. He wants to marry Alice. And so that's kind of the relationship that they have, which is not great. And
you have to imagine too, I think for a man like Theodore Roosevelt, who has an ego in his own right, enjoys having the bully pulpit and all of that, to then have his teenage daughter become America's princess. That's what the press calls her. She gets almost as much press coverage, if not more sometimes, than he does. And I think that that weird relationship goes both ways, where he's got this person who is more than equal to him in personality, intellect, and ego, and sort of self-worth, self-assessment. So that couldn't have been easy for a man like Teddy.
I would imagine not. And she does, Alice is a hellraiser. She does all kinds of stuff that women are not supposed to do, young women particularly. She hangs out all night with her girlfriends. She goes to parties. She drinks and smokes, and she hangs out with boys. And, you know, she's a very well-bred,
smokes
well-educated
on the roof of the White House.
Which no one is supposed to do.
So I heard the story was like, the way it was presented is she was smoking inside the White House and Teddy kept saying, you cannot smoke inside the White House.
So, she goes
onto the roof and smokes on the White House.
I love that so much. She just raises all kinds of heck and it becomes a big deal. And as you can imagine, the press loves this. They get out of bed in the morning for this kind of stuff. She makes great copy. She's beautiful and she's totally in the public eye and her father just can't even deal. She's distracting from the legitimate policy things that he's trying to accomplish. And at one point, he has advisors that literally come in and sit him down and say, Mr. President, can you please control your daughter? And Theodore Roosevelt says, look, I can be president of the United States. Or I can control Alice. I cannot possibly handle both.
Can't do both.
She has, is it Emily Spinach?
Emily Spinach.
Emily Spinach. Okay. So she has
A real menagerie of pets at the White House under Theodore Roosevelt. All of his children are crazy for animals. Teddy lets these kids bring in just animal after animal after animal. But I think Alice takes the cake with her little green snake, Emily Spinach, because she had an Aunt Emily who was very long and thin. So that's why she was named Emily and Spinach for the green color. She carried Emily Spinach around in her purse, which is a pretty baller move. Alice would wear Emily around her wrists, around her neck, bring her out at parties and dinners as a bit of a party trick.
That's a good party trick.
It is.
I would leave that party, but
yeah, so hard.
Other people might enjoy it.
So she brings Emily Spinach to one of her father's press conferences, and like coiled around her right arm. And the press are like, why do you have a snake? And she's like,
why not?
Why not? You know? And she eventually, this goes on for years. And eventually Alice is so much of a distraction. The snake too, but mostly Alice, is so much of a distraction that her father decides he's going to send her on a congressional delegation to Japan. And it's the largest congressional delegation, or CODEL, if you're in with the DC speak.
Oh, this is not an insider podcast.
Oh, sorry. You're right. It's terrible.
I am not in with the DC
speak. No, I've never heard that.
Anyway, Alice, and in those days, obviously, you can't fly to Japan. Flying doesn't exist yet. And so she has to take a train to San Francisco and a boat across the Pacific. She'll be gone and out of the press for months. It's ideal. This is exactly what her father really wants. And so he sends her on this delegation. She's got plenty of chaperones. She's at this point about 20 years old. And one of the members of Congress that they send along with her is a single man named Nicholas Longworth. He's from Ohio. He comes from a very good family. And rumors about Alice Roosevelt and Nicholas Longworth start basically before they even leave Washington. There are all sorts of crazy rumors that they're flirting and they're in love and they're engaged and they're already married and she might even be pregnant already. It's like a feeding frenzy for the press. And it does the exact opposite, basically, of what her father had hoped that this trip would do. At one point, she says that she was pushed, but it's possible she jumped in to the pool on board the boat, the yacht that they're traveling to Japan on. And of course, the picture that goes out to the press is of her with her, you know, dress clinging in just strategic places.
Well, I heard that like the press asked her about that and her response was, well, next time I'll take my clothes off first.
Right. And it's a big deal, her big trip to Japan. As it turns out, the rumors about her and Nicholas Longworth were the real thing. They were in love. So she gets back to Washington and she very quickly thereafter announces that her and Nicholas Longworth are engaged and they're going to get married. So we're going to have not our first and certainly not our last White House wedding. And White House wedding, you can imagine, very fancy. You get the dress Marines, the fine china. She gets gifts sent from leaders all over the world, the Kaiser in Germany, the King of England. They all send over gifts to Alice. And Alice, of course, loves being the center of attention. She's super excited. She's 21 years old and she's getting married and it's very wonderful.
I should mention she's 21. Nicholas Longworth is 14 years older, and he's significantly older, and they have a very hot, hot, hot relationship, both hot, hot, hot with chemistry and then hot, hot, hot with different personalities and bickering. So this is the classic 21-year-old jumping into a situation that is going to not be an easy road ahead.
Oh, absolutely. She totally wants to get out of her father's house. Like, that's super, like, obvious. So anyway, in the midst of the wedding reception, Alice is loving being the center of attention, but she starts to get a little concerned about how long it's taking to cut her wedding cake. And so in the middle of a White House wedding, Alice walks up to one of the dress Marines, takes the sword out of his belt, and walks over to the wedding cake and cuts it herself, like Luke Skywalker. And you and I, we've all lived in DC a long time. And I know this isn't an insider podcast, but I feel like there's one thing I know for sure about Washington is that if you're in the same room as the President of the United States and you're wielding a sword and the Secret Service doesn't stop you, this is your world. We just live in it. This is Alice is in charge, man. As Becca alluded to, the marriage does not go so well. They are hot, hot, hot for a while, and then not. And pretty quickly, they move into a house on...
I think for a little context about Nicholas Longworth, Alice Roosevelt, then Alice Roosevelt Longworth, is to remember that they ran in a social circle where there was a lot of intermixing. That includes a woman named Sissy Patterson, who, along with the daughter of an ambassador, Marguerite Cassini, she, Alice, and Sissy were all called the Three Graces by the press. So imagine kind of like the original Mean Girls. They ran the roost, and all of them, but particularly Sissy, had had her eye on Nicholas. And so you can imagine, even though Longworth and Alice wed, that doesn't mean that Sissy loses some of that interest. Sissy Patterson will write a very thinly veiled book about Alice, Nicholas, and her. So this marriage from the get-go has all of this makings, I think, for infidelity and intrigue and fighting and jealousy, because both Longworth and Alice are very popular and pursued within their social circle.
What is the name of that book? Do you know?
Fall Flight or Glass Houses. She wrote two. And they were basically, I mean, they were like frenemies for the rest of their life. Alice was livid about the book, but she and Sissy would still sort of socially mix, but behind closed doors were constantly talking about each other behind their backs.
Right. And they also
From what live, I know about Alice, that seems like something she would do
to anybody.
Everyone?
Yeah, pretty much.
And they also live like... barely a block apart. So they're literally on top of each other.
And you can imagine the kinds of dinner parties that Alice likes to throw. So it's Alice and Nicholas, who on any given day are either about to tear each other's clothes off or tear each other's heads off, depending on the mood. Then they're going to bring in maybe someone they secretly hate, like Sissy and her, whoever she's seeing. Then they might bring in two couples from opposing political parties, and then a man and his mistress. And then Alice just gets everybody drunk and talking about politics and watch the sparks fly. So that was like a fun evening in the Longworth house.
Honestly, I feel like that'd be a fun evening in my house. I'm not gonna lie to you guys.
Sounds like a great reality show.
Becca, do you want to talk about the voodoo doll for Helen Taft?
One of the things I love about Alice is she stays connected to the White House her entire life, to the presidency, to the White House. She knew every president from Benjamin Harrison all the way up to Gerald Ford. So we're talking about a pretty long span of presidents. The woman lives to be, what, 95, 96? She lives a long, long time. And some presidents she loved, some presidents she really hated. Apparently she and Warren G. Harding didn't get along. We can speculate maybe on why in another podcast. But apparently she had no love for Helen Nellie Taft, who was the wife of the man who would come after Theodore Roosevelt in the White House, William Howard Taft. So Alice decides to bury a voodoo doll of Helen Taft in the White House gardens on the day that they move out, as sort of a warning to Helen Nellie Taft that Alice is kind of the true first lady and her spirit is going to remain there. And of course, she's going to keep getting invited back to the White House all the way until the 1970s.
So Alice's marriage doesn't work out super great. Eventually, they're living in separate bedrooms. They have both Alice and her husband engage in extramarital affairs. Nicholas Longworth was kind of a playboy before he got married and doesn't really see a lot of reason to stop doing that once he is married.
Are you insinuating that members of Congress are known to engage in adulterous affairs?
Never.
Listen, the facts are what the facts are, guys.
He's probably the only one, though. I wouldn't worry about it.
I agree. Absolutely. The rest of them are pure as the driven snow.
We only wrote an entire Capitol Hill scandal story about all the others.
She eventually has a long-term affair with a senator. And by the way, there is some Senate versus House of Representatives rivalry between her and her husband. He's in the House and her new paramour is in the Senate, which is considered to be better.
He's in the Senate and that's where they have more power, if you catch my drift.
So anyway, his name is William Borah. And I'm going to spell that, and it's important, and I'll tell you why in a minute. Borah is spelled B-O-R-A-H. He's from Idaho, and basically he's responsible for creating the Labor Department. Not important to the story. Eventually, Alice and her husband do not have any children, which is considered to be a little strange, until Alice is 40, and she presents her husband with their only child, a daughter named Paulina. And no one in Washington can quite figure out where Paulina comes from, since it's well known that her and Alice and her husband are sleeping in separate bedrooms. So Alice, because this is who she is, she jokes with everyone that it's pretty obvious that the Senator Borah is the father. And she jokes with everyone that she wanted to name her daughter Deborah, D. Borah, D-E-B-O-R-A-H, from Borah.
Thankfully, so clever.
I know, it's so great. Thankfully, she's persuaded not to, and she names her daughter Paulina. Nicholas Longworth, despite the origins of the child, he actually was a pretty decent dad. He apparently loved Paulina very much and raised her as his own, so he was pretty cool. All of Alice's friends referred to Paulina as Aurora Borah Alice.
This is a little bit of a tangent, but there's tragedy in Paulina's life too. Her husband dies really, really young, 28 years old, kind of the scion of this big company, big family. So these two sort of wealthy families marry. They're only married a short time. Her husband dies of viral hepatitis really, really young. He's not even 30. And then she dies of an overdose of sleeping pills. Although they did manage to have one child together. So there is a granddaughter of Alice Roosevelt Longworth out there, which I guess maybe makes her a granddaughter of Borah, of Senator Borah.
Alice remains involved in Republican Party politics in Washington pretty much for the rest of her life. She lives in a mansion on Massachusetts Avenue until her death and entertains all and sundry. She has lavish dinner parties, very political. She is also present in Washington when her distant cousin, Franklin Roosevelt, becomes president of the United States. Now, Roosevelt genealogy is complicated, but the short version is Franklin Roosevelt is like a distant cousin, but he marries Alice's first cousin, Eleanor. And so he's basically her cousin-in-law. Alice and Eleanor Roosevelt do not get along.
They could not be more different as people. Truly. Two great women in history who I admire and love both could not be more different.
Eleanor is very sedate and policy oriented and cares for people and very saintly. And Alice
refers to anyone who isn't in her echelon as the peasants. which I find, you know, sweet, but also a little intense. Alice admits that she's a hedonist. She says, I have an appetite for being entertained. Eleanor is so much more withdrawn and introverted and certainly more focused on lifting others up, whereas Alice revels in the class system, which puts her at the top of it.
Absolutely. She considers Eleanor to be boring and saintly and kind of drab, as opposed to her, who's flashy and entertaining and beautiful and vivacious. She very much supports when Franklin has an affair with his wife's social secretary, a woman named Lucy Mercer. She says Alice invites them both over to dine at her mansion multiple times. She says that Franklin deserves to have some fun. He's married to Eleanor, which kind of gives you an insight into their personality. After the affair is over in 1933, Franklin Roosevelt is elected, or he becomes president. And one of the interesting tidbits about Alice that I love is at this point, her father is long dead, but they've decided to create a memorial to Teddy Roosevelt. And because he was such a great naturalist and interested in nature and involved in the national parks, they decide that a fitting memorial for Teddy Roosevelt would be an island in the Potomac River right off of DC. And they're going to make it into a nature preserve. And everybody thinks this is a great idea. But then the election of 1932 happens, and it's clear that her distant cousin, Franklin Roosevelt, is going to be coming to Washington and becoming president. And so Alice actually spearheads pushing forward the dedication of her father's memorial, not so that it's before her cousin takes office. She wants Republican President Herbert Hoover to preside over the dedication of her father's memorial rather than her cousin Franklin, who she doesn't especially like, and he's a Democrat, which is even worse. So Herbert Hoover, actually in the waning days of his ill-fated presidency, gets to preside over the dedication of her father's memorial, which is actually still in the Potomac River to this day.
She specifically says to the press during this election, with her cousin running against Hoover, she says, I'm a Republican, so of course I'm going to vote for Hoover. But even if I wasn't a Republican, I would still vote for Hoover over Franklin, which I think is more of a maybe sense of how she felt about the Democratic Party, because I think she was very fond of Franklin as a person. In fact, there are some rumors. Much of this is attributed to Cissy Patterson, so we have to take it with a grain of salt, but that Alice herself had been pursuing Franklin D. Roosevelt, had considered perhaps trying to strike up a match with him, bringing together these two branches of their family. So that might explain some of the tension she felt with Eleanor, that she had her eye. Now, that comes from these gossipy, mean girl sort of letters, but it's a little interesting twist there.
But gossipy, mean girl letters will be the source of a lot of what we talk about in future episodes.
This is why you should still write letters with all your friends' business in them.
Yes, your emails will haunt you one day. So just to wrap up Alice's story, she lives in Washington through her father's presidency. After her husband's death in the 30s, she remains a force in Washington up until her 90s. She dies in 1980 at the age of 96, and really is basically sharp as a tack right up until the very, very end. It's only the last two or three years of her life that she really kind of succumbs to basically old age. She refers to herself repeatedly as the other Washington Monument, which is fantastic, and entertains everybody in her DuPont Circle mansion. There actually is a lot of Alice. You can go to sort of Alice sites in Washington today. The couple of the big ones, obviously the White House, where she lived while her father was president. You can also go to her DuPont Circle mansion. You can't go in. It's a private foundation now, but it's right off of DuPont Circle on Massachusetts Avenue, across the street from the Embassy of Portugal.
So since we are all tour guides with Free Tours by Foot Washington, D.C., and that is kind of, I don't want to say the sponsor of this podcast, but kind of what brings us all together, we're all tour guides with D.C. by Foot. And so where do we see Alice sites? What tours do we cover her on?
The biggest tours, I think, to find Alice and her stories includes our Wicked Embassy Row and Georgetown tour, which sort of really gets into the heart of Alice, where she lived, where her friends live. I was just reading a very juicy tidbit in the Washington Post. You can go online and find this. It's from 1974, an interview with Alice when she's 89. I think she's coming up to her 90th birthday at that time, maybe. She's in her 80s when she's being interviewed, but she tells this story about a woman named Miss Alice Barney, who confessed to being in love with her. And if you go on this tour, you'll hear about Miss Alice Barney and why that might be a little scandalous. Apparently, Alice Roosevelt was quite flattered by the attention, although to the best of our knowledge, did not pursue that relationship.
I did not know that. I love Alice Barney's story, like for her own story.
I didn't know that she was involved with Alice Pike Barney either. That's fantastic.
Well, this is really her friend Cassini tells her that Miss Alice Barney is in love with you. And, you know, Cassini's kind of offended, this idea that a woman would profess love to another woman. And Alice Roosevelt is just thrilled. She's flattered. She thinks it's wonderful. And she just says, back then it was a different time. Everybody was making love to everybody. People were marrying their pets and putting flowers in strange places, which I don't even know what that means. But if you have a Washington Post subscription, this profile written by Sally Quinn, who lived in Georgetown, and is an amazing woman herself, profiling Alice Roosevelt Longworth. It's such a cool glimpse into DC history. So I think that Wicked Embassy Row Georgetown tour gives you a good glimpse into that sort of upper elite echelon of the city. The other tour where we talk about Alice quite frequently is our White House at Night tour, which shows you the White House and really digs into the scandals, the murders, the sort of spooky, weird things that have happened in and around the White House. So those are kind of the two big ones to get Alice in your life.
Though we do, I know we talk about scandals and dark side just because that's our morbid interest, but we do have historical, family-friendly, open-to-everyone tours, and we see some of Alice's sites, and depending on who your tour guide is, might briefly mention her on our historic DuPont Circle and Embassy Row tour, our daytime version of the dark side tour. So I don't remember, I heard this story firsthand, but I don't remember who told me this story, but it's either one of you guys or maybe a former tour guide. But remember when we started to get involved in Embassy Row and we were doing some research with the Embassy Row Hotel? I think maybe it was Kara, a former tour guide with us, but we're telling the story about how when Embassy Row Hotel, which is a hotel on Massachusetts Avenue and it's next door to Alice's former residence. When it first opened, they had like a big opening party and there's neighborhood residents and people who had lived in the area before were there at the party. And there's this older woman in a wheelchair trying to paint a picture of how I imagine her. They said that she was draped with pearls and kind of had like a fur stole. And she's sitting in the wheelchair, very prim and proper. One of the folks working at the Embassy Row Hotel went up and like, oh, how, you know, why are you here? Do you know the stories of this neighborhood? And trying to just make small talk while the party was getting started. And the person who worked at the hotel said, next door, that was the home of Alice Roosevelt Longworth. And the older lady goes, oh, that bitch. And then just stopped, did not elaborate.
I 1000% believe it.
I imagine her saying it with a smile on her face.
I think us as guides, we love her because she's a juicy subject, but I couldn't necessarily imagine her as my neighbor or my friend.
No. I would totally hang out with her.
I wouldn't let her anywhere near my husband for sure.
I think this about her and her father all the time, that they're super interesting as like subjects, but the lived experience of being like near them and in their orbit must have been exhausting.
Since we're talking about Alice, we've mentioned the DuPont Circle neighborhood a lot. Massachusetts Avenue, where Alice's home was located, is still standing today, is what we often refer to as Embassy Row. This is a part of DC that I think Locals sort of ignore if you don't work over there, and travelers don't always know to go visit. But it's such a great glimpse into this really important period in DC, the turn of the 20th century, as DC was really rising as a social power, as a political power, the United States really becoming this massive foreign power. So you have this boom of diplomacy, you have all this wealth in the Gilded Age. So it looks so different from the quaint little row houses of Capitol Hill, and it looks very different from the memorials and monuments of the mall. So I think putting Embassy Row, DuPont Circle on your visit list is wonderful. Our company, Free Tours by Foot, does have a free self-guided walking tour of Embassy Row on our website that you can check out. There's also a lot of great dining and shopping. I know for me, I always find a lot of great places to grab a drink, grab a snack. There's Kramer Books, which is a 24-hour bookstore, which I know is right up Rebecca's alley. But it makes for a nice mix of looking at beautiful architecture, really cool real estate, seeing that diplomatic side of DC, and also getting into a more neighborhood part of the city.
After listening to this podcast, we know what everybody's appetites, and now they'll be interested in learning and seeing more about Alice when they come to Washington, DC. So in the meantime, if you are looking to support us tour guides with Free Tours by Foot Washington, the best way to do that is to sign up to our Patreon page. Where you can join at different levels of tiers. You get one-on-one tours, or you get to see the bloopers and outtakes from our videos and our podcasts, and you always get early access to listen to these episodes of Tour Guide Tell All. You can also buy gift certificates on our website, dcbyfoot.com. That can be used for future tours. Like how our tours are Name Your Own Price, we really want our stories and what we're putting out there to be on budget for anybody. So if you can't sign up to be a patron or to buy a gift certificate, following us on social media is also a great way to support us. Just saying hi, let us know that you're listening. You can find us at Free Tours by Foot on Instagram and Twitter, or at Free Tours by Foot HQ is our YouTube channel and our main Facebook page.
I would jump in and mention that right now, especially with the shelter in place and us really not able to get out and do tours on site right now, we do have a lot of content that we filmed over the last few weeks. And a lot of it's going to be dropping not just on our Facebook and Instagram page, but on the story. So you want to check every day. We're going to be dropping a lot of these behind the scenes stories, pointing out some things that may be a little bit lesser known history. So truly, if you're interested in what we're doing and not ready to commit to being a patron yet, that's okay. We're going to put a lot of great content out on our social media. And anytime we do that, we also throw up our guides Venmo. If you want to leave a virtual tip at any point to help support our guides during this time, we're always super appreciative.
What do we want to talk about next week? I want to talk about drugs with Dan.
I think it's going to be time maybe for an episode on drugs. We've talked about getting into
murders, drugs, sex, yes. Rock and roll.
We don't have a lot of rock and roll in Washington.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah, I think we should do drugs. Dan should do drugs. I mean, yeah. that didn't come out right. I think Dan should talk about.
He just has a really good story about like an LSD party in the 60s in Georgetown. And then I always get the kids asking about, did George Washington grow marijuana at Mount Vernon? Which, I mean, yes and no. You'll have to listen to the story to find out.
This was super fun. Thanks everyone for tuning in and listening. Thanks Cannon and Rebecca for letting me chat about a woman I think is incredibly fun to talk about.
You can listen to Tour Guide Tell All for free on the Apple Store or the Google Play Store, or wherever you get your podcasts.